Hey, and welcome to the 6 Minute Mile. Lisa Hamilton was born and raised on St. Croix in the U.S. Virgin Islands. As a kid, she was an accomplished swimmer who came of age during a remarkable time for athletes in the Virgin Islands. One of her childhood swimming buddies was a guy named Tim Duncan, who eventually left the pool to become one of the greatest power forwards in the history of the NBA. As a collegiate swimmer in Pennsylvania, Lisa discovered that she also had a knack for running. That knack turned into a string of international competitions and PRs of a 4:58 mile and a 2:43 marathon. But Lisa isn't just a deeply talented athlete, she's also a deep thinker. She's built a remarkable following as a running coach by helping her athletes become conscious runners. At a time when mindfulness has become trendy, Lisa politely points out that she's been at it for decades. Runners often turn to Lisa after they've tried everything else to recover from their running injuries. She believes that you first need to address underlying emotional issues in order to work past physical injuries. It certainly worked for her, as she continues to chalk up amazing results well into her late 40s. We think you'll enjoy Lisa's understated charm and zen-like perspective in our conversation. We'll see you out there.
Do I have the story right that you actually kind of grew up with Tim Duncan and actually competed in some junior events with his sister, and you know him?
Yes. His sister was my best friend in St. Croix many, many years, but did grow up with Timmy.
Oh, that is so cool. And do you ever stay in touch with him?
No. We lost touch, I guess, when I went to college. Yeah. So I'm a few years older than he is. And I went to Widener here in Pennsylvania, and his sister actually went to Swarthmore, and it turned out that Widener and Swarthmore were probably around 6 minutes apart as far as driving distance, you know, so even through college, we were able to stay connected. And I remember when he started to get really popular at Wake Forest, you know, he would send her these newspapers of where he was featured, and then she would just cut out these articles and have them taped to her door. And we just called it like the Hall of Fame, you know, for Timmy. And this was in college while he was still at Wake Forest. But it's pretty amazing to kind of see how everything took off for him, and to know him as the little boy that loved video games and to, you know, play with G.I. Joe and just was like a nuisance and always tagging along is interesting.
That's right. It's the older sisters. Yeah, you were trying to shoo him away and say, "You're annoying. Yes. Stay away from us."
Yes.
Wow, very cool. How did you first get your start in sports and in endurance sports? And obviously we'd love to tie that to what you're doing now, which is fascinating and helping older masters runners like myself and Brad try to enjoy this sport that we love, but enjoy it pain-free. But how did you first get your start in endurance sports?
Well, I mean, my start began with swimming, and this was in the early 70s. And I even have pictures going back then when I was stood barely higher than the starting block. And I was a competitive swimmer for about 15 years. And that afforded me the opportunity to compete and to travel internationally. And it wasn't until I got to college and my roommate was running cross country, and I was actually waiting for swim season to start. So I figured that I would just kind of give this running thing a try. And I just immediately fell in love with it and continued to do it after college. I ended up not swimming my first 2 years of college, but I did still swim the remaining 2 years.
Very, and so paint us this idyllic picture. Is part of the lore of Lisa Hamilton that you grew up swimming across the bays, you know, avoiding sharks and off the island of St. Croix or something?
Right. So, I mean, there wasn't too much of that, you know. So in the Virgin Islands, there was really one swim team, and it happened to be on St. Croix. And I trained in a 50 meter outdoor pool, and it was pretty much year round. And, it was 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week, sometimes some intense training camps in Florida. And during my high school years, interestingly, my one of my coaches was Michael Loberg. And Michael Loberg, if you follow swimming, was the coach of Dara, who placed, I want to say it was second, who got a silver medal in the Olympics. I can't remember what year it was, but he was actually my coach before he was her coach, you know, and from Germany, and the other coach was from Norway. So swimming was a big part of my life, you know, it was my life, you know, for the most part.
Well, and a lot of my friends who are into triathlon come out of swimming, as you probably know. And they always say, man, if you can endure staring at the line at the bottom of the pool for hours at a time, you can do anything, right? You're mentally tough enough to do anything. So do you believe that? Does that build some mental toughness as a kid?
Yes, I mean, it absolutely does. And I attribute a lot of that, you know, my discipline to that, to being able to stare at that black line at the bottom of the pool for hours each day, week after week, year after year.
And did you take to that naturally, or how did you find that discipline?
Well, my mom, you know, put me in it at a very early age, and it was just what I did. I didn't even question it. And interestingly, it wasn't until I got to college and I was introduced to running that I actually contemplated whether I enjoyed swimming or not. And I realized, you know, I think that I'm a little burned out and I want to do something different, which was why I didn't swim those first 2 years of college, but it was just my life. You know, I got up, I went to school, I went to swim practice, I came home, had dinner, did homework, and I repeated that for 15 consecutive years.
Amazing. And are your parents amazing athletes?
So my mom does know how to swim. My dad, you know, also swims. My mom, not so much, you know, into too many other sports, but my dad, you know, with softball and played football, he did wrestling and other sports like that.
And did you grow up with brothers and sisters who are also sports nuts?
Well, I have a sister and she was on a swim team as well.
But you're being modest, but you probably outswam your sister.
Well, we'll just say that there are some talents that I have and there's some talents that she has as well, and they could be different, right?
I love it. And I'm curious, do you still have family on St. Croix?
Yes, I do.
How do they do in the hurricane?
Yeah, I mean, it depends which hurricane, you know, that we're talking about. So, we've been through hurricanes where we've lost everything. Yeah.
And the most recent one was 2-3 years ago, the real big one that rolled through?
Yes. And there wasn't too much destruction, you know, for, you know, as far as my mom's, you know, home.
Oh, good.
So that was good. But it hit St. Croix the same way that it hit Puerto Rico, you know, although Puerto Rico had to deal with the floods and St. Croix didn't have that aspect, you know, of the hurricanes, at least not this time around. But I think it was like a category 5 as far as the force.
And did you run much as a kid in the islands? Because it's some pretty rugged terrain, right? So it's very hilly, very mountainous.
Yes, St. Croix is. It's of the three Virgin Islands, it's the flattest, you know, right. But there are some pretty mountainous terrain, you know, and there are hills, but I did not run much. I was primarily a swimmer. I mean, that's what I did. I did participate in a couple of women's races, you know, while, you know, on the island. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you say that, but, you know, and I say this because after, you know, in college, I went back to do this Three Kings Day mile race. It's like an after Christmas kind of celebratory race. And I was purely on swim training and I ran like a 4:58 mile or something like that, you know, so you know, still kind of holding the record there in that for that race and, you know, had no run training before. So that was the other thing with the running is that when I started, it was that I was also good at it.
Right. And I think, do you still hold the U.S. Virgin Islands record for women's marathon time?
Yes.
You do. And what was that? It was sub 3 hours, right? Nicely sub 3, I think.
Yes, it was a 2:43.
That is great for a swimmer. Not bad. And so how'd you come up with the idea for the current business and a lot of our readers of our newsletter tend to skew a little bit older, tend to skew more to be like 35 to 55 year old. So this is, you know, we've got several hundred thousand potential customers and followers for you within our readership. But because every single person I know in that age group struggles with pain and injuries, and it sounds like that's the main focus of what you're doing. But how'd you come up with this idea to create this business around this?
I mean, from my own experience running. So I've been a competitive runner for over 25 years, doing distances from 800 meters, you know, all the way up through the marathon. And when I first started, I was injured relentlessly. You know, even in college, I believe the first injury that I had was shin splints. And I remember them just being so bad that my shins were literally black and blue. I could see the discoloration on them, and they were really tender to the touch. And then each of the four remaining years in college, I had stress fractures on the insides and outsides of my ankles. And all I wanted to do was run because I loved it so much, but I kept coming down with one injury after another. And you know, that continued for, I would say, like the next 10 years. And me enjoying the sport and also having some aptitude for it was trying to do everything that I knew how to do so that I could recover from these injuries as quickly as possible and to prevent them from happening again. And I've just found that the things that I was doing, that although there was a place for them, they were never getting me to where I wanted to go. So I really became a passionate student about how to not only quickly overcome injury by reconditioning your body in a holistic way, but also preventing it from happening again.
And talk to us about the holistic way part of this, because I feel like most people I know treat, oh, I've got plantar fasciitis, I treat that. I've got a knee problem, I treat that. Lower back problem, I treat that specifically. But talk to us about the holistic idea.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I find that, you know, that's the same thing, is that a lot of the times people will tend to look at where the site of the pain is and just focus on that aspect of it, whether it's the foot or the knee or the hip, you know, or the lower back, and do that in isolation without really addressing other movement components that might have contributed to those pains in the beginning. And one of the things that I found is that when we address the entire body, the entire movement, that a lot of these things, they just simply drop away. And then the person becomes more efficient in their running and are also more durable, so that, you know, they prevent other injuries from happening.
And how much of that is mental adjustment and how much is physical? Do you have a plan in place to say, hey, wow, you know, as runners, we're building up the front of our legs more so than glutes and hamstrings, and here's how you do that? Or it sounds like a lot of what you're doing is mindset based.
Yeah, so it's a combination of the two. You can't separate the mind from the body. You know, so I always say that everything happens twice, first on the inside and then on the outside. Oh. And also, Brad, that the issues, they aren't always in the tissues or just in the tissues. And that what stops a lot of people isn't necessarily their physiology, but it's their psychology. It's how they think about things. It's how they make decisions. It's their commitment. It's their priority, their willingness to take action, that all of those things are in play, and the events in their life. If we want to broaden it out to stress, you know, if we talk about, you know, people who are maybe in a difficult relationship, or, you know, they're recently divorced, you know, or they've had the loss of a loved one, or their work situation is tough. It's that, who's to say that we can only feel stress in our neck, in our upper back, in our shoulders, in our head? No, tension can be felt in these other places as well, like our glutes and our hamstrings and our quads, you know, so it's really important to look at those as contributing factors for why someone is experiencing longstanding pain and discomfort.
And so you've got some great case studies on your website of athletes that you've worked with, but what's a good example of someone who, you know, without getting overly personal, but someone who's kind of worked through some kind of emotional issues, let's say, that were impacting their running or level of pain. Are there a couple of good examples that jump to mind of people that you've been able to work through with that?
Right. I mean, like I said, it's all intertwined. And I mean, I smile only because it's been amazing the kinds of transformation that I see our clients making. And there was a guy that just graduated from the 10-week workshop. I want to say it was a couple of days ago, and we ended up getting a case study video from him, and it's not posted yet, but he had been dealing with injuries for the last 3 years, and the last 2 years, because of them, hadn't run much. And for him, it was Achilles pain, and it was also plantar fasciitis, and just gotten to the point where, you know, he was really cautious and afraid, you know, to push himself, right, or to even get into the sport, which is something that is common, I find, among people who've been injured quite a bit. And when he started working with us, you know, in one of the modules that we have that's really created about mindset, you know, he said when he first came in, it was one of the kind of things that he would poo-poo, like, I don't need that. I just want the strategy. That's not for me. I'm not that kind of person. And interestingly, as he continued to do it, because he trusted the process, he learned to kind of love that, and not only got the benefits for him, but was also passing it along to his daughter as well. And when we had our interview a couple of days ago, you know, one of the things that he said to me is that, you know, that it was very impactful on his life, you know, that it literally just how he thinks about everything. He's like, friends are noticing how different he is, you know, how he's not always complaining about his injuries, not always talking about them, you know, and things like that. So,
yeah. Very, and so part of, you know, without giving away all your secrets, but when you talk about a 10-step or a 10-day workshop, I guess you said, so what does that look like? And you know, for people like him who are skeptical and say, well, just, you know, just get me to the part where I can strengthen my lower back to offset this pain I have. So, you know, how do you get people to suspend disbelief and you know, believe in your process?
Right. So that's a great question. And I will say that with this particular gentleman, that the last 7 weeks, he was completely pain-free, you know, wow. And he's now in one of the continuing programs, and he's not the only one that has had, you know, this kind of a turnaround. So it's really been incredible how people can have these long-standing injuries, and we can watch the transformation happen rather quickly by addressing not just the body, but also addressing the mind. So, you know, let me see. Can you repeat that again?
Well, I threw a little off track, but yeah. So in a 10-day program like that, what would that look like for someone like him who came in with a couple of different injury points and maybe not the right mindset?
Right. So it's basically a process, you know, that we have people go through, and it's a process that pretty much figure out a baseline of where they are. And then, you know, taking that information and building a custom program to get them where they want to be.
Makes sense. And where did you draw most of your inspiration for this? So did you, was part of this what you studied in college? Or it sounds like you're applying a lot of your own real world experience to it, but where have you drawn from mostly to create this program?
Right. So that's a great question. Like I said, every person that I talk to, like on the phone, that enrolls is really a previous version of myself, you know? Yeah. So I know how they feel. I know what it's not only doing to their running, I know what it's doing to their life, you know? So I have many sources that I have drawn on over the last 25 years, you know, to become an expert, you know, at what it is that I do. And where there may be any gaps, you know, then I supplement those with other resources, you know, other members that are a part of my team that work alongside me so that we can all move an individual to the end result, you know. So even as part of my team, I will have physical therapists that are on the back end that are there as movement coaches, you know, or reconditioning injury coaches or mindset coaches, you know, to help to deal with that aspect of it.
And so part of this is out of the goodness of your heart, but part of this is a business too, right? Is this your primary income? Is this what you do for a living?
No, I mean, I also work as a writer, a technical writer. Yes. Yes.
And I want to come back to that in a second, but what's the business model for this? Because a lot of the resources you generously make available for free.
So you can Google anything. Podcasts, Facebook groups, magazines, and the statistics show that above 65% of runners are injured at any given time.
Right.
And like 50% of those injuries are reoccurring. Right. So it's not working for people. It's not working.
But your information, so as part of the idea, some of your research, I know part of what you do is you'll describe a 5-step program, and you'll make some of that material available for free. But the idea is eventually you would like people to graduate and take this more seriously and say, okay, I want to sign up for a 10-day program or a multi-week program. Is that kind of the idea?
No, I mean, it's really a 10-week program, you know, that they go through, and it's everything that they would need in order to recondition their body so that they can overcome any chronic injuries that they've been dealing with for months or years, gain consistency in the training so that they can achieve their running goals, and also stay injury free so that it's something that they can enjoy for life, and not just running for life, but movement for life. So we always uncover that there's deeper whys as to the importance of them being able to run.
And what are some of those deeper whys?
You know, so, you know, some of the deeper whys is I want to be a role model for my children. I have the same frame as my mother, and I see how frail and debilitating she is right now. My son committed suicide, and the only time I feel close to him is when I run.
Those are deep whys. Amazing. And sounds like those are some actual examples.
Those are some actual examples.
Amazing.
Those are some actual examples. I just left an abusive relationship, you know, where he broke my jaw, broke my back. And, you know, running is a way for me to get my life back, to get myself back.
Wow. And you're charismatic and you've been successful in just about everything you've attempted, it seems. But how are you able to establish that level of trust with some of your clients?
Right. So, you know, this is how they become, you know, clients, is that I have a conversation, you know, with them about really what's not working in their running, what the goals are, and to really see if we're a fit. So it's in that, you know, process of the asking, you know, those questions, you know, that the rapport, you know, the trust, the skepticism is overcome, you know.
And do you draw on kind of outside influences? I mean, do you draw on forms of meditation, or do you kind of root this in a your religion? Or I mean, how did you come up with this view of that holistic athlete?
Right. So, I mean, it's interesting because with the Conscious Runner, I actually registered that domain name in 2010. And now it's almost like you can't go anywhere without seeing the word, you know. So this comes from my own inner transformation. My own inner transformation of you know, getting rid of the demons that I might have had, or the limitations, or the things that were holding me back from getting to where I wanted to be in life, and then kind of showing others the way. Not that I am there yet, because it's always a work in progress.
Well, and if you don't mind sharing that, but it's, you know, again, from the outside, it seems like a charmed life, and you set records everywhere you've been, you've competed internationally, but in your own personal journey, what are some of the things that you've overcome, or things that were holding you back from your swimming or running career?
Right. I mean, with the running, I would say that one of the bigger things would be the injuries, you know, that I experienced. Not that that has to be, you know, where I'm at now. You know, I can do the best that I can for where I'm at now. You know, certainly that. And, you know, even I could say, like, the interview that I'm doing with you, that, you know, it's uncomfortable for me to even be on camera in this way, you know, that I'm a very private person. You know, most, I don't like to use labels, you know, but, you know, it's stuff that I'm trying to relabel myself, you know. So, you know, introverted, like on the extreme side, you need a lot of space around myself, you know, prefer to go inward and those types of things, you know. So, but in having this business, for example, if I'm not putting myself out there, then the message is not going to go anywhere. It doesn't matter how great a coach I am or how good results, if I can't get out there and talk about it, you know. So that's what I do, is I address those things that would be holding me back, you know, from doing the things that I need to do to get the message out there.
And I imagine your clients pick up on that, right? And they pick up on that sincerity, and you're not overly self-promotional. I mean, if I had half your running results, I would be standing on a corner in downtown Boston handing out pamphlets, you know, bragging about myself. But
they don't even know. they don't even know.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, as I say it, it's not something that, you know, you know, that comes up in the conversation, you know, for the most part, you know. So because I would say, I mean, it's not about me, it's about them. It's about, what do you want, you know? And whether I can help you get there.
I just read something recently where it said this concept of an elevator pitch. Like, okay, you're on an elevator and you only have 60 seconds to make your pitch, whether you're applying for a job or trying to, you know, raise money for your company. And this guy who wrote this little blog post said that's totally unrealistic and the wrong way to think about it. The right way to think of it is, there's an opportunity for you to ask your fellow companion in the elevator questions about their life. You know, maybe you can learn something about them and help relate more to them, but there's no way you're going to brag about yourself and convince a total stranger that you're wonderful and trustworthy in a 90-second elevator ride.
Right, right. I mean, there's a saying that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's what I lead with on these calls, is that I care. I get you. I got you.
And at the same time, I'm going to brag for you. So we were doing a little show research, but you know, you had these amazing records and were an accomplished collegiate swimmer. But then just last year at age 47, sorry to date you, but you ran a 1:26 half marathon in Philly last year. Do I have that right?
Yes, yes.
that's pretty remarkable. And now how much training went into that effort? Part of the answer is a lifetime, I understand, but
No. I mean, and yeah. It's hard to answer because that wasn't a peak race, you know, for me. For me that wasn't good. But I don't like to say that because I understand what it represents, you know, to other people. So around that time, I was probably running around 60, 65 miles per week, you know, and doing a couple of hard workouts. I was training for Boston because in September, I had qualified for Boston, had never done Boston, and just figured that I would give it a try. I had a friend that has run it and said that it's an experience that you don't want to miss. So we were after a training run in August. We basically looked at when the last day I could qualify by was, and it was like 3 weeks later, and I figured I had done enough base running to qualify. So I went, and 3 weeks later I was on the line and qualified.
So you qualified for
Boston, right?
After that half marathon, though.
Before, like in September, right? So that was part of the, when I ran that half marathon, you know, that was like sort of a beginning the Boston build up for April, which ultimately got canceled, you know, because of everything that went down in the world.
I know. And so what were your goals for Boston? Just, you know, kind of holistic goals, not necessarily.
Right. No, I mean, I would have gone under 3 hours for sure. If I had run it, I didn't actually have a specific time goal, you know, but yeah, I could say.
And for you personally, so what would that have meant for you personally?
I mean, it would have been great. It would have been great for sure.
I'm always curious about where the satisfaction comes. I mean, almost everyone, 95% of people who cross the finish line are pretty ecstatic they've done. You know, they may be 10 minutes slower than they had hoped, at your level of accomplishment, what's the next thrill, or what's the next kind of accomplishment that really matters to you?
Right. So, I mean, right now, I mean, really helping others. I could say that that's where my mind is at, you know, at this moment, you know, so even for me, I didn't run yesterday. I ran today. That it's a little bit tough to get out there and, you know, without races on the calendar in the future. Not that I have to have that in order to run, but you know, I was training pretty consistently and for the last 2 years, and Boston, you know, it didn't happen. So I ended up pacing a friend in a half marathon that we just did around locally. So he had a virtual half. He wanted me to pace him originally. I told him it kind of conflicted with Boston, but since Boston was canceled, I went ahead and paced him in that virtual half because I had all of this fitness, you know, for Boston that I wasn't able to use, you know, so that's the way that I used it, and then took some time off and, you know, started to come back again. So I'm in the process of kind of, you know, building up again so I can be ready when races open. So that's kind of where my mindset is, you know, right now.
And will you do Boston next year? Did you carry over your registration?
I would like to. Yeah. So that's still one that I would like to complete.
Great. I am sitting about a half mile from the top of Heartbreak Hill right now. So.
Oh, cool.
If we're not in the race, we'll be at the top of Heartbreak Hill cheering you on.
Cool.
And taking pictures of you. So, but that would, at sub 3 in your age group, I should have looked this up, but would that be a top 10 finish?
Possibly. I didn't even look it up, you know, myself,
yeah.
You know, so I would have been happy to do it, you know, so.
No, you're right. You're absolutely.
Where my mindset was. I mean, certainly we have time goals, but that course, it was a little bit intimidating, you know, to me, from what I hear, you know, yeah. So it was very hard for me to even pick like a goal time.
Sure.
You understand, only because I'd never experienced that course before. And from what I heard was a little bit scary. You know? So I was like, I don't know. I don't know.
No, it is a great experience. I'm biased because I've lived around here all my life, but it's a terrific experience. You will not be disappointed. You may be disappointed in your time, but you won't be disappointed in the experience. That's our prediction. But and I also noticed that I think when you last updated your bio, you had not done an ultra. It looks like you had not gone beyond marathon distance, but maybe that's changed. But have you thought about doing, relying on this growing up in the hills of the Virgin Islands, putting that to use and doing some trail runs or ultras?
No, not too much. I mean, when the thought passes, it quickly goes through. And St. Croix is actually a very small island. It's only 26 miles long,
right.
628, and it's 7 miles wide. You know, so I run longer than the width of the distance of the island every day. You know, which is sometimes hard for me to wrap my mind around. So there are points right. on St. Croix where you can actually sit in your car and you can look out your front window and see one coast and then look in the rearview mirror and see the other. You know, so it is very, very small.
I love it.
Yeah.
And what else is on your bucket list as an athlete?
I would say Boston, you know, because that's one right. that I hadn't done before. I would love to do, you know, more half marathons, 10 mile races. I like that distance as well. To be fit, you know, feel strong.
Great.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you go 2 or 3 days without a run?
All of the opposite of that, you know, so not fit, not strong.
Right. Yeah. No, it's an amazing sport, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, but otherwise you're not trying to run 7 marathons on 7 continents or, you know, kind of doing Boston, London back-to-back weeks or anything. No sort of crazy feats like that in mind.
No.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And when you think about, obviously every runner's different and your process is immersive and holistic, but, you know, if you're sitting next to someone that dinner, assuming we'll all be able to sit next to each other at dinner again sometime soon. And someone says, oh, I'm a runner too, but I've always had these nagging injuries. What do you recommend? Is there a, you know, is there a 30 second, 60 second high level kind of piece of advice or philosophy that you share with people?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because, yeah, I mean, I would say go to the site and watch my training. And if that resonates with you, book a call. You know, that's what I would say, yeah. You know, because usually when I'm on the phone with someone is, you know, we get to a point in the conversation where it's like, you've been to 7 local podiatrists and you're still dealing with this 5 years later, telling you to change your shoes isn't going to help.
Right.
And chances are you've already tried that.
Yeah.
So if you want something different, then you know, you're going to have to do something different.
Love it.
You know, so it's not about straps, bands, braces, rubs, inserts, lotions, potions, praying to the running gods, strength training, foam rolling. You know, it's not about that.
Yeah.
Because that's what people are already doing, you know.
Yeah, they've already, by the time they get to you, they've already tried most of that stuff, right? Yeah.
Yes. They literally write sometimes everything. I've tried everything.
Although I do notice in some of your videos, you are, maybe you're a sponsored athlete, but it looks like you like TRX straps for some of your training.
Yes, I do. I'm a big fan of TRX, yeah, for sure.
And what are your favorite moves on a TRX setup?
So I would say, well, like some of the single leg stuff, you know, so anything that involves, you know, one leg, like single leg squats and.
And why is that so valuable for runners?
The single leg? Yeah. Running is a series of single leg squats, of mini squats.
Right.
But when you really break it down and set, you're landing with 2 to 2.5 times your body weight, you know, on each leg, and then you have milliseconds to be able to stabilize, you know, your body.
Well, we have we have kids who are soccer players and lacrosse players, and ACL injuries are a really big deal. And
yeah,
so they've started particularly among women, so teenage girls, and so we started working with a trainer because a couple studies have come out saying ACL tears are actually pretty preventable with the proper training. And so, you know, we're kind of fascinated by that, but they had a really good point. They said, you know, you're not going to tear your ACL when you're running full speed straight ahead. ACL tears occur when you're trying to stop. And so they focus a lot. You're kind of reminding me of your statement of 2.5 times your body weight coming down, but they focus a lot on those landing movements. So kind of a soft ninja landing off. So everyone does plyometric box jumps up, but they really focus on how do I train myself to land softly, or, you know, like one-legged step offs of a 18-inch or 24-inch box.
I mean, and I agree is what I'm saying is that even when running, you want to run as lightly as possible.
Yeah.
And land as softly.
All right, so I'm going to hit you. We've done this a couple of our guests, and it kind of works for. But I'd love to hit you with a couple of quick questions, just to, you know, on a couple of your favorite things that have influenced your life, or you know, things that make you a little different. But I'll hit you with a couple rapid answer questions, if that's okay with you. All right. So, morning runner or evening runner?
Morning.
No hesitation there.
None. 4:45, 5 a.m.
Really? Dark doesn't scare you?
Love it.
Why do you love that so much?
I can't even put words on it.
This
morning being out there under the stars and looking up at Orion's belt and just the magnificence of everything.
Yes.
Love it.
Hopefully the skies were clear. There's a nice full moon around here.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not quite full, but there's enough moonlight to really light your way this morning.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Music or no music in headphones?
No, for the most part, no.
All right.
And if I do have headphones, it's not music. You know, I would use it as an opportunity to learn something.
Podcast.
Or to grow in some way. Yeah. Ah. Either podcast or YouTube video, something inspirational, something transformative.
What's it, other than your own amazing podcast, which we will be sure to link to, but what's a great podcast that you like to draw inspiration from? Our readers and listeners might like.
Right. So that's a great, I don't listen to, boy. I'm trying to think of the last thing that I listened to, you know, from a podcast. I don't listen to anything regularly because it's more about the content, you know, than really just following one podcast religiously. But I would say that, you know, I would listen to stuff like Tony Robbins. I would listen to stuff from Marianne Williamson. I listen to stuff from Tara Brach, from Eckhart Tolle, you know, as far as running, a lot of it is, you know, about the mechanics, you know, of running, about injuries, you know, things that have to do that are research related. And what I find is that there are so many different opinions, you know, that are out there is what I find.
But it all builds on itself. Favorite book?
Again, too many to name. I'm sorry. These are supposed to be rapid fire, but these are the way that my mind thinks, you know.
So, I should give you advance warning. But it was something. Anything that sticks out from, you know, childhood or you know, more recent book that you like, or a running book.
Right. So the same people that I mentioned that I would listen to are the same kinds of books, you know, that I would read as well. Now I have a lot of running books. I mean, everything from, you know, versions of Jack Daniels to Brad Hudson to, you know, McMillan, you know, some of his stuff, you know, Lydiard stuff, you know, those are, I'm just trying to think back, you know, a lot of books on strength training, a lot of books on conditioning, on rehabilitation.
If a runner,
right, the conscious runner. So it's like both. That's basically what my shelf looks like.
Great point. Right. So there's technique and there's philosophy and inspiration. And if a runner can only buy one book, my old copy of a Jack Daniels book wound up jumping out of my eyes yesterday off my bookshelf. I'm like, I haven't looked at that in years. There's actually some good stuff in there still, right? But I don't know, if you're recommending a runner who's maybe run a few 5Ks and 10Ks, wants to step up to a half marathon or marathon, is there one running book that you'd particularly recommend?
Gosh, I can't, you know, recommend.
It's the holistic thing. You can't just pick and
choose. Right. I'm so sorry. I wish I could answer that question for you. I mean, there might be some that I wouldn't recommend. And, you know, I could go that way, you know, but that might not be good to, you know, start talking about that. Would have listeners and things. But, you know, yeah, as far as, there's more than one way, you know, to get an outcome, and different things work for different people. And this is why customization is so key, you know, even within training, you know, it's key. Is that I remember actually, hearing something Ryan Hall said, and I think that this is true, but it's, you allow the training to follow you. You don't follow the training. And, you know, I remember my coach that sometimes when I was overly fatigued is that we would just scrap that workout for the day. And he would say, I want you to go out for 10 minutes. And someone might think 10 minutes. I mean, what does coach have you go out for 10 minutes? Right. You know, I mean, I run a 2:43 marathon. What's that going to do? But no, I knew that he had a reason for that. You know, there was a reason for me going out and running those 10 minutes, you know? So, that's kind of the way that I look at it. It's just so hard, and even with those plans out there, because it has to adapt to the person.
No, great. And look, this itself ties into your theme. The very first thing we talked about being a holistic approach to running, right? You can't just pull one book or one training plan off the shelf or listen to one podcast and say, okay, that's it. Now I've got my philosophy for life. And it sounds like you're constantly building that foundation over and over with every new YouTube video and every new book you read. It paints the right picture. It makes sense to
me. Better ways to meet the runner where they are. You meet the runner. Some people thrive on higher mileage, you know, some thrive on lower mileage. Some can do 2 hard workouts a week. Some can do 3, some can do 1, you know.
Very interesting. Favorite movie?
So many of those. I love Shawshank Redemption. And the beach scene in that is on St. Croix. That's one of the beaches in St. Croix. That last scene.
Oh, I didn't know that. Where they're supposed to be in Mexico or something,
that's
I think.
Right. But St. Croix.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Sign me up to be an extra.
Yes.
Go hang out on the beach filming those. I love it. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would you pick?
Oh, Brad, stop asking me these questions. My brain does not work like this. Who did I pick?
My very small brain only thinks about like these one, like, you know, channels at a time. I can't multitask. My wife is an amazing multitasker.
Right. I mean, they're just so difficult the way that I think, because I'm looking at things from all different kinds of angles, and well, it depends, you know? So if I had one, I guess it would be Jesus or God, you know, maybe have dinner with him or her.
That would be hard to beat. That's pretty amazing. Very cool. That completes the list of our embarrassing questions for you.
Thank you.
But no, it's an amazing conversation. And look, we will link out to your website. And it's just, we love having these kinds of conversations, because it is, to outsiders, it seems like a pretty one-dimensional kind of sport. You put on running shoes and go for a run. What is there to the sport? But it's kind of a thinking person's sport. I think there are even studies that back that up, and it's kind of a virtuous cycle, right? Because that mind-body relationship, is that physical exercise and the act of running really feeds the brain, and the brain feeds the running. It's so refreshing to hear your philosophy on this. That's